Okay, so I'm going to read part three of a four-part series of these collections of Srila Prabhupada addressing the devotees, his followers. The one that we read yesterday was, "You are helping me." And then the first one was, "Meant to fight." And there's two remaining ones, finding happiness and meeting together. So we'll do finding happiness. Worry about meeting together another time. So, we have to accept a spiritual master who is strictly in these four lines of disciplic succession. Then we shall be gainer. If we accept a so-called guru, then it will not be possible. We have to accept guru in the disciplic succession. Therefore, it is recommended here, tat purusha nishevaya. We have to serve him faithfully and always honestly. Then our purpose will be served. If you take to this line of action, dedicating life to Krishna and always engaging in the service of Krishna under the direction of tat purusha, means who has no other business than to preach Krishna consciousness, then our life is successful. We cannot deviate from the path of the previous acharyas. We must strictly follow. That is the qualification. We must follow their instruction. Therefore, I repeatedly say to my students that you chant Hare Krishna mantra 16 rounds and follow the regular principles, your strength is there. If we, just like Himalayan mountains, nobody can push it. Very simple thing. It is so powerful. Yaha Hoiteshwara Siddhihaya. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's request. Don't deviate from the instruction. Then you will stand as strong as the Himalaya mountain. Very simple thing. Anyone can do it. We are asking, following the footsteps of predecessor Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction to Rupa Goswami, Rupanuga. Therefore, we are called Rupanuga, Anuga. Anuga means following, going, following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. So as the Rupa Goswami is following his predecessor, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so we have to follow our predecessor. Then we will be successful. There is no doubt about it. Nobody can do any harm. I've given the ideas, the philosophy in the books. So it is your business to develop all over the world. You are very intelligent, Europeans and Americans. Give it shape for the world prosperity. Give it a practical, it is practical, there is no difficulty, so much land, very good fertile land in Africa, Australia, and America. All of them can be utilized for the happiness of the whole world. Our purpose is how to become happy. Everyone is struggling how to become happy. Someone is thinking that if I get money, then I'll be happy. Somebody is thinking that if we become one with the Supreme, then I'll be happy. And someone thinks if I can get material power, then I'll be happy. So those who are thinking in terms of money, they are karmis. And those who are thinking of terms becoming one, they are jnanis. And those who are thinking in terms of getting material power, they are yogis. But the bhaktas, they don't want any such perfection. They, bhaktas, let me worship the Supreme, that's all. Therefore, he has already, and they are all in want. Bhakta is satisfied simply by worshiping the Lord. Swami Katartosmi, and all others, karmis, jnanis, yogis, They want something, so they cannot be happy. So if happiness is my aim, then I must become a bhakta. Otherwise, there is no happiness. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is to make people free from all sinful activities. Then they will be happy. Because in the soul proper, it is pure. Just like you contaminate some disease, so you suffer. You have got fever. You've got some pain. You have to go to the physician. He will give you some medicine to counteract the contamination. Then you become happy. Similarly, we are all part and parcel of God, Krishna. Naturally, we must be happy. Anandamayo byasat. This is our position, that we must be always anandamaya, jubilant. That is our position. Just like Krishna is dancing, you have seen. Similarly, our position is simply dancing with Krishna and be happy. Just like these boys, they are being trained to think of Krishna 24 hours, kirtaniya sadahari, just like we have constructed this pandal. Our business is to preach Krishna. So the energy employed for constructing this temple, that is also Krishna, that energy. Somebody is doing anything can be done for Krishna, nirbanda Krishna sambande yuktam vairagya uchate. If our activities are always dovetailed for Krishna's satisfaction, that is called vairagya. Vairagya. A man is engaged in business, that's all right. But if the fruit of that business is made, it is meant for Krishna. That is svakkarmana. Generally, we work for our sense gratification. I have got this money. I must use it for my sense gratification, or my relative sense gratification, or for my country's sense gratification, for my society's sense gratification. So this is materialism. And when the same thing is turned for Krishna's sense gratification, that is spiritual. That is the difference between prema and kama. Kama. It has been very simplified by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita. Atmendri priti vanchatari bhali kama. Atmendriya priti. If you want to satisfy your senses, that is called kama, lust. Krishnendriya priti icha dhari prema nam. The same thing. When you try to satisfy the senses of Krishna, that is called prema. Because we want material happiness, therefore there is difficulty. So material happiness, you have got experience, it cannot give us satisfaction. The big, big countries, America, in Europe, so many, they have advanced in material happiness, but actually they are not happy. Material happiness cannot give us happiness. Happiness is when we actually come to Krishna and love him. Happiness means also love. So it is very difficult. Still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered to distribute this knowledge all over the world. Let us try. Even the people do not take our instruction. That is not our disqualification. Our qualification is, let us try our best. The Maya is very strong. To take the living entities out of the clutches of Maya is not a very easy thing. My Guru Maharaj used to say, he had so many temples all over India, and he used to say sometimes that if by selling all these properties, temples, if I could turn one man to Krishna consciousness, then my mission will be successful. He used to say that. So our purpose is not to construct big, big buildings. That is required for propaganda work, for giving shelter to people. But our main business is how to turn the face of the bewildered conditioned souls towards Krishna. That is our method. That is our main purpose. Our business is not to ask God for our necessities. God gives necessities to everyone, even to the one who has no religion. For example, cats and dogs have no religion. Yet Krishna supplies them with the necessities of life. So why should we bother Krishna for our daily bread? He is already supplying it. Religion means to learn how to love him. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm going to read Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, text number 2. Speaking of the banyan tree, the metaphor, roots up, branches down. Text 2 says, the branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. The tree also has roots going down. And these are bound to the fruitive actions of human society. So roots are up and down, branches are up and down. Bound to the fruitive activities of human society. Purport. The description of the banyan tree is further explained here. Its branches spread in all directions. In the lower parts, there are variegated manifestations of living entities, such as human beings, animals, horses, cows, dogs, cats, etc. These are situated on the lower parts of the branches, whereas the upper parts are higher forms of living entities, the demigods, Gandharvas, and so many other higher species of life. As a tree is nourished by water, so this tree is nourished by the three modes of material nature. Sometimes we find that a tract of land is barren for want of sufficient water, and sometimes a tract is very green. Similarly, where particular modes of material nature are proportionally greater in quantity, the different species of life are manifested accordingly. Next paragraph. The twigs of the tree are considered to be the sense objects. By development of the different modes of nature, we develop different senses, and by the senses we enjoy different varieties of sense objects. The tips of the branches are the senses, ears, nose, eyes, etc., which are attached to the enjoyment of different sense objects. The twigs are sound, form, touch, and so on, the sense objects. The subsidiary roots are attachments and aversions, which are byproducts of different varieties of suffering and sense enjoyment. The tendencies towards piety and impiety are considered to develop from these secondary roots, which spread in all directions. The real root is from Brahmaloka, and the other roots are in the human planetary systems. After one enjoys the results of virtuous activities in the upper planetary systems, he comes down to this earth and renews his karma or fruitive activities for promotion. This planet of human beings is considered the field of activities. So That's a lot of information to process with our information processors. Which part of it should we go into? There's twigs and the tips, so the objects of the senses and the senses. In the description found in the third canto, Kapila Dev's description of the principles of material nature, he describes the unfolding of the material elements from the agitation of pradhan, and one element to the next element to the next element, and then, but with each element comes a sense and a sense object. Not using a metaphor of a branch of a tree or a tree with many branches, it's just, it's like an accordion, a thing with bellows, and there's a collapsed form, and then you open it up, and then you can close it, and you open it up, and you close it, and it's the unfolding of the material creation and the unwinding or dissolution of material creation is just, it's ever existing, and sometimes it's open and sometimes it's closed. Sometimes it's in a dormant state, sometimes it's in a manifest state. And all are connected to the source, because Krishna opens up the accordion and closes it. Krishna unfolds the creation and winds up the creation. They're all energies that are resting within him. And so using this metaphor, the planet of Brahmaloka, presided over Lord Brahma, that's the root of the material creation, but the root of Lord Brahma is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu resides in the spiritual realm. And yet, for the satisfaction of the desire, for the service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is providing living entities their opportunity for illusory enjoyment, creation unfolds. The original seed of creation is the personality. The source of the seed is the personality of Godhead, and the seed is his own energies. So the seed germinates by his own arrangement. In the purport it's explaining, just as a seed of a plant or tree grows by the nourishment of water, so Krishna's arrangement is the modes of nature are that watering agent or the expanding of the seed of material existence. It's marvelous. It's a remote control mechanism where Krishna doesn't even have to push any buttons. I was visiting a place where a car, one of the little toy cars, was going along the road, and with a remote control, another child had the remote control, that little panel, and he was pushing buttons, and the car was going and then turning left and then going reversing and doing things. And another child was walking along the street looking at the car that was going like this and going like that. And the child that was with the panel, he was laughing and giggling. And then the father of the child came out, and to the other child that was just passing by the street, he was emphasizing how startled he was. And then the child came out and showed he had this little panel and he was making the by remote control. So Krishna's remote control mechanism is so superior. He doesn't have to push any buttons. It's all going on just by the initial effort is he desires something, just like in Mahavishnu similarly, and Brahma similarly, just desires. Mahavishnu desires to see that the shadow reflection of his internal potency, Chaya Devi, she has something to do because he's enjoying with his internal potency. And in a distance, he sees the reflection of his internal potency, and she has nothing to do, and she's sad. And he feels compassion. She wants something to do. So he gives her something to do. And he gives her something to do just by glancing. Just because he's compassionate and he glances, voila. Through his glance, living entities are carried. The time energy is also carried by the glance. And the living entities, in contact with Chaya Devi, the reflection of his internal potency, then becomes agitated. The original pregnancy is described in Sri Brahma Samhita. And because material nature, in its dormant state, the modes of nature are there, but they're not activated because of these two missing components, the soul, jivas, who have desire, very important to have desire, but specific desire for independent enjoyment, misplaced desire, and time, another very fascinating subject or component of time energy. So with that contact, the modes of nature become activated. That is to say, the living entity that has desire, but that desire is dormant, it's like a seed that's dormant without water, it's just dormant. Potential is there, but it's dormant. So the living entity has desire that's dormant. And that desire then becomes nourished by the three modes of nature. But the living entity can't do anything yet because there's no elements. And so the elements start separating out of this undifferentiated totality of material energy. And they separate out one by one. And literally, it says it in you know, groups of five, but in Kapila Dev's description, it's not just groups of five, it's one by one, one by one. One by one, from subtle to more gross, and from that to the next more gross, from that to the next more gross, and it just unfolds the senses and the sense objects and the elements in that sequence, five and five and five. The elements. False ego is the first element to separate out, our dear friend. And false ego in contact with the mode of goodness, then mind, material, mind separates. False ego in contact with passion, the material intelligence separates. False ego in contact with ignorance. The five gross elements, in turn the five senses, in turn the five sense objects. Or actually it's five sense objects and the senses in that sequence. And then the next and the next and the next. But even the five elements, they separate out sequentially. And the sense object and the sense itself. So that's the unfolding of this tree. As another way of describing the same thing that's being presented in this purport. And These are the principal, there's branches with their twigs and the tips, and then there's roots. The subsidiary roots are attachments and aversions. Now where else in Bhagavad Gita is that discussed? Attachment and aversion. This is chapter 15. Where else is it discussed? Chapter 13. Here's how it's discussed in chapter 13. You can look it up later. It's verses 6 and 7, where the 24 elements are again identified. And in addition to the 24 elements, there's another term, another part of what helps make the world go round. The word is vikaram. Vikaram means... No, that's not what it means. Hare Krishna. Interactions. Mixture. You take the 24 elements and stir. This mixed with that gets other things, such as desire and hate, happiness and distress, the aggregate, the sum total of... So those are feelings. You know, the states of mind. I'm attracted, I'm repulsed. I'm feeling happiness, I'm feeling distress. Second chapter. I'm feeling honor and dishonor. What is that? The verse in the second chapter says it's born of the senses contacting sense objects. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya. It's a perception. It's a sense perception that strikes the mind and says, oh, I'm happy. Oh, I'm unhappy. Oh, I'm attracted. Oh, I'm repulsed. And one man's food is another man's poison, as they say. So something that may be very attractive to a devotee is not very attractive to a non-devotee. What's not attractive to a non-devotee may be very attractive, vice versa. One of my favorite personal impressions is going on Harinam Sankirtan in New York City, because our temple in New York City is in Brooklyn, and to go from Brooklyn to Manhattan, you have to go over a bridge. There's two bridges, the Brooklyn Bridge and Manhattan Bridge. If you go to the Manhattan Bridge, you pass through Chinatown. So it's a good bridge to come back on, because in the evening or afternoon hour, it's less jammed. Brooklyn Bridge is jammed. So we go by the Manhattan Bridge. And in the evening, it goes right through Chinatown, and the smells in the air is the smells of people cooking their dinner in Chinatown. And it may be a very hot summer, but we roll up the windows because... But for them, it's very appetizing. Sublime. And for us, it's... So, attraction, repulsion. Happiness and distress. The water in the summer is nice, cool. Water in the winter, it's just the same thing. It's just water. But one time it's happiness, another time it's distress. Etc. It's a state of mind that comes from just, it's nothing but a transformation of these 24 elements, and a very important one of them is the mind. And you can train your mind. Like, for example, austerity is the wealth of the Brahman. You've heard that phrase. Austerity is the wealth of the Brahman. When a sense gratifier looks at the life of a Brahmana, it looks painful. What they want is sense gratification. That's wealth. They want artha so they can have kama. That's living. That's happiness. And when they look at the life of a Brahmana, whew, pain. But a Brahmana looks at the life of the sense gratifier and goes, oh, that's what a painful life. And they like devotees. As you progress in spiritual life, you like the austerities of fasting on Ekadasi, and it's not painful. It's nice. It's nice. You look forward to it. Oh, when's the next Ekadasi? To fast for Ekadasi. Yes. And not just Janmashtami, big festival, but it's purifying. And Brahmana's happiness is the purification, the feeling purified. The Brahmana likes places that are very clean. The Brahmana doesn't like a place that's dirty. And it's the other way around for people in the mode of ignorance. They come into a place that's clean and they feel comfortable. But they make it messy. And Brahmana does the opposite. He makes, first thing, Prabhupada said, this is the characteristic of a Brahmana. When they enter a place, the first thing they do is make it clean. And when they leave the place, it's cleaner than when they began, when they entered. It's characteristic of a Brahmana, cleanliness. And they like. It's inviting. We all have the experience. You come into a place that's very clean. It's inviting. It doesn't have to be fancy, just clean. If it's clean, it's inviting. Nice. For a Vaishnava, for a devotee. And other people, gotta have clutter. Gone into homes where it's just furniture everywhere. You can hardly even move. And that's, you know, that's happiness. It's having lots of clutter. How often they use those things? Hardly ever. Just, but having them. I'm looking, oh, look at this one. Anyway. The statement that's in the purport is, the subsidiary roots are attachments and aversions. So there's fruitive activities, primary roots, and then this fruit, that fruit, attachment and aversion, which are themselves byproducts of different varieties of suffering and sense enjoyment. The tendencies towards piety and impiety are considered to develop from these secondary roots. So people ask, why are there so many religions? There's the answer. Another way of saying the answer is due to the modes of nature. Because from this verse or this purport, the aversion and attachments that come as a result of sense gratification or the absence of sense gratification or suffering, then you know some idea of religion. This is religion, and that's irreligion. It's born of the modes of nature, and it's a product of matter combining in different ways and striking the mind, and someone says, this is my religion. And someone else says, that's my religion. And some have the name God, as Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, the introduction, that everyone worships something. They may worship, in some tribal positions, they worship a mountain, or they worship a bird, or they worship a feather of a bird, and some, they have a whole religion based around something, a waterfalls or something. Something great. Because the tendency for worship is there, and if it's not worship of Krishna, it's going to come out according to the modes of nature. So, according to the modes of nature, religion. But what's it to achieve the fulfillment of my attachments? Or helping me to avoid my aversions? And this is worship in this way, that's my religion. Back to the first verse, the tree is to be cut down. And part of what will help one to cut it down is to understand it, how it works. And it's not said here yet, but it's described in the Bhagavatam. The tree itself provides the handle for the axe to cut down the tree. The branch of the tree, on the edge of the branch goes the axe. And then with the handle and the axe, you cut the tree. Even, in other words, or in our existence, we're having some knowledge. Now, our capacity to understand something like what Rai Chaitanya was saying yesterday, our capacity to understand is limited because we're influenced by the modes of nature. So whatever we hear is going to be something less than a pure transmission of that sound. We're going to hear something distorted according to the modes of nature, unless we're pure. So since we're not yet pure, there's some distorted perception of what we're receiving. Still, take the knowledge that you can or have received and apply it with submission to Krishna, with the spirit of submission to Krishna, and benefit will come, purification will come. And as that purification comes, then you'll hear more, or hear better, or hear more completely. And take that, and you engage that in a practical way in your life. And by that submission and practical activity, then one's purification furthers and continue. Where gradually the distinction between the reflection, the tree that's reflected, and the tree which it is reflecting become discernible, the difference between the two. There's a likeness, but there's a difference. And one can then very clearly identify with the real thing and still deal with the reflection for what it is. It's a reflection. It's not the real thing. And a very important element of this metaphor of the upside-down tree is the reflecting, mentioned in the previous purport, the reflecting services desire. So if desire is made in harmony with Krishna, then one can see even this realm as Krishna sees this realm, as his facility for the living entities who are attracted to the mode of passion and thus fruitive activities, or attracted to the mode of ignorance and lamentation and illusion and intoxication and craziness, and the mode of goodness. And that's what this place is for those people, those souls influenced by the modes of nature. Let me see what I can do in service to Krishna to bring Krishna to their attention. So Krishna has given me some service. And as we were hearing Prabhupada saying the first evening, very difficult. How is it possible? Please help me, Krishna. Like that. That's how we can take this 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, knowledge of the tree metaphor, and work with it. Not just learn it so when you get some questions on your Bhagavad Gita exam, you can get an A in your exam. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to become attached to Krishna and detached from the illusory representation of this world. Okay. I'm going to end there and see if there's some discussion. One of the things I like about visiting in Hyderabad is these sessions, because you have many nice questions. I look forward to it. I'm sharing that with you openly. The first question or two usually starts right up over here. And then you're all ready to jump in. Go ahead, Murari Chaitanya. Here's the microphone, but you just speak without it. Okay.
As you were describing, the more we contact Krishna, the attraction for material energy cuts down.
The more we become attracted to Krishna, the more the influence of the material energy diminishes. Yes. Sure. Yeah. Deity, prasadam, devotee association.
So my question is, especially when things like this in scripture come so very technical and philosophical, it's the nature that why don't I contact the holy name and go through all this couple of...
Very nice.
Is it that all have same purifying effect?
Yes. All have... So his question is... Do all forms of Krishna have same purifying effect? The answer is yes. But we're individuals, and some like this, some like that, some like the other. Krishna's complete for everyone, so it's okay if you like Harinam and you like less detailed discussion like this. Still, the detailed discussion is good for us. You know I think I referred to it. Yes, I did, the first evening I was here. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, no, maybe it was elsewhere. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya speaks, or Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes, that one should not... There are some topics that are difficult, but one should not avoid them because by engaging in them, it makes one's mind stronger. So some people have greater capacity. Some people have lesser capacity. That's because we're individuals. That's fine. And it's not expected that if someone has lesser capacity that they're going to very easily understand things. They may or they may not. They may. They may not. Krishna may just disclose something for someone that's analytical capacity isn't so great. Just disclose it to them, like the Brahmana that was reading Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya certified, you're the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita. But it's there... Because the whole process of bhakti is complete. It includes everything, including the full explanation of why. Some people don't ask the question why. But there are people that do ask the question why. And when you come in contact with people that ask the question why, wouldn't it be nice to be able to supply the answer? You could say, I don't really know, but it's just, I like chanting. But to the extent that you know, you can say, And there are some persons that if they get, you know, the first answer, they're not going to be very satisfied. So we want is a service, not it's going to create or destroy my liberation or my Krishna consciousness. You get an F in your Krishna conscious exam if you don't understand all this analytical thing. No. But it's there for a reason. I remember when, in the very early days when Prabhupada was speaking about Mayavad philosophy, we didn't really understand why he was speaking so much about it. It was like, you know, talking about a giraffe in a zoo or something. And we've never seen a giraffe in a zoo. Never even seen a picture of a giraffe in a zoo, and he's describing giraffes. You know, why is he talking about impersonalists? But again and 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 again. It's important. Prabhupada felt it very important, so we took it with some importance. And then in course of time, we began to understand why he was making such a strong point about it. But in the beginning, there wasn't any attraction for that. It was more wondering why is he talking about this. So the modes of nature, there's of all topics in Bhagavad Gita, there's more verses on the modes of nature than any other topic. So it's important. And several chapters from chapters 13 to 17, it's restating things that were discussed earlier in further detail. Why did Krishna, he could have just ended Bhagavad Gita in chapter 12, finished. But the other is there for some reason. It's deeper consideration of the same subject matters that the earlier chapters present. It helps to strengthen. For one who takes the time to go through, it helps to strengthen one's conviction, one's capacity to discern matter and spirit, and stay on the spirit side and not be pulled by the other. Detachment from knowledge is not the essence. The essence is bhakti. So it's sufficient. Just chant. Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for the nice class. There are two times. I mean, like, one is when the material energy is impregnated. The soul is in this material energy, and then time is there. It has a specific time where it is comes from the pores of Mahavishnu and then goes back, and there is this time, and then there is this eternal time that's in the spiritual world. And what I wanted to ask is that, like you said, a pure devotee basically is able to perceive both the eternal time. And he sees the current time, or what do you call this?
The pure devotee sees as Krishna sees, and Krishna certainly can see both.
Yeah. I just wanted to understand is, what is the conception of time from an eternal perspective, and what is the difference between that conception and the conception of a person who is seen from a material perspective? I mean, like. Not material perspective. What I mean is that when a pure devotee sees the both the relative times, what is that perception? And
what my thought is going to, hearing your question, is Gopu Kumar, because he was able to move freely between the spiritual and material realm, or Narada Muni, able to move freely between the two realms. Doesn't describe in detail what their perception of the relative places are exactly, so I can't give you a scriptural answer to your question other than the description that's there, that these two personalities can freely move between the two realms. And they can distinguish in which of the two realms they are.
And I had another question in the same line. Say someone is progressing in spiritual life. He may not have the perception of the eternal time, but
that's right.
But he has done some bhakti. He's moving forward, and he leaves this particular body and takes up another body.
Well, just
then, how does he is accommodated in this overall perception of the eternal time? I mean, he may not be aware of it, but the eternal time, because his soul is aware of it. I mean, like his soul has done some bhakti.
What do you mean his soul is aware of it?
In a sense, it has somehow, it's become a little bit more aware of Krishna.
Well, the concept becomes more familiar, but I can say from practical experience and discussing with other devotees that the time energy works differently when you're absorbed in devotional service. It just acts differently. It acts differently. It's because of being more closely connected to Krishna than previously, there's some sense of a different sense of time. Passage of time is something that's an opportunity to serve Krishna. It's a medium to connect with Krishna, and therefore it's valued so much more for that reason. The contaminating idea of time is meant for getting some material object for enjoyment. Time is money, as they say. The experience of time is stressful. And time is an opportunity to serve Krishna is blissful. And when you're blissful, the sense of time is very different than when you're stressful. It's just experienced differently. One of the symptoms of bhava is a list in Nectar of Devotion. But something kalatvam. Huh? Avyakta kalatvam. Avyakta?
Avyata.
Avyata?
Avyata.
Avyata. What does that mean?
Avyata.
Avyata.
Not wasting time.
Avyata. Avyata. Avyata kalatvam. Okay, so one values time in a different way. It's a commodity, or it's something that I can use, spend my time to serve Krishna. So I value it in relation to Krishna. So my experience of time is closer to what eternal time is than in sense gratification. And that life of time in sense gratification is stressful. It's illusory. But, you know, whatever I don't have, I wish I had. Whatever I do have, I'm afraid I'm going to lose it, and so on. It's just, time is stressful. And I'm trying to go faster than time. Beat the clock. And I'm getting beaten by not just time, but by my own material consciousness. So it's closer to the experience of a devotee is closer to what eternal time is. For the residents of Vrindavan, they cannot bear one nimesha, a fraction of a second of not being in Krishna's association. It's unbearable. Time acts differently there. And it's in terms of attachment for Krishna. Or the opposite is, it's one's disconnection from Krishna. Time acts differently. Prabhupada writes about it in Nectar of Initial Upanishad, how time and energy acts differently on the non-devotee and the devotee. The non-devotee says, I don't have time. You invite them to take part in devotional service. And they say, if they even speak anything at all, I don't have time. And it's true, the material energy is such that it gives them so much to do, they don't have time. It's true. They're making an honest statement. I don't have time. But somehow, when we make the commitment to Krishna, there's time. It's not just eliminating things. It's the time energy acts differently. It's both. Some things are certainly eliminated, but the time energy acts differently. And the devotee experiences that. And it's a indication of what is eternal time. So those devotees that are in touch with eternal time and yet are moving about in this realm, your initial question is, what's that experience like? How do they view time? They can see how persons are wasting time, and for them it's very lamentable. It's right in Prabhupada's purports. Just wasting the valuable time of human life, living like animals, in ignorance of life's purpose, and feels pain, wishes to do something, does something. But meanwhile is experiencing their relationship with Krishna at the same time. For compassionate purposes, they're mixing with people who are in another plane of consciousness to bring them up. But their consciousness is always with Krishna. That's their contact with eternal time simultaneously. That fluidity of movement is their privilege. Anyone else? Okay, while you're coming up with your next question, here's a question. How do we maintain cleanliness? Oh, that was your question. Wow. Did your mom know that you asked this question? How do you maintain cleanliness is the question. Listen to your mom. Oh, get another answer, Maharaj? Sure, listen to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, okay. Because Prabhupada taught summit cleanliness. When we understand the mode of goodness will promote cleanliness. And cleanliness enhances our being situated in the quality of goodness. One nourishes the other. So, if you like cleanliness, then go with it. And if you struggle with cleanliness, then some of the other qualities of goodness will help the cleanliness quality. Like being truthful or being compassionate. Or keeping your life simple, or staying very regulated. All the different qualities of that are symptoms of the quality of goodness, you do those and it nourishes goodness, and that will make cleanliness more, as you say, maintainable. Part of it is also just habit or practice. If you associate with persons that are by habit clean, that will also help you maintain cleanliness. I spent some time with I shared a room for some time in the Brooklyn Temple with Purnachandra. Then he was Dasadikari and then became Goswami. Then he left our association. He left this world. But when we lived together, it was really nice because he was really brahminical and everything had its place and was put in its place. As soon as using something, it would go back in its place. It wasn't compulsive, he wasn't obsessive about it, but he just was very clean. And then we chanted japa together every day. And that was a wonderful experience because he had certain rules. And the rules were, once you start chanting, don't go getting up and do climate control, turning on the heat or the fan or the something or the getting water. Or, you know, just you're chanting and you just sit and chant. Don't do anything. Just sit and chant. And, very concentrated mind. So associating with people that have such brahminical qualities, it helps your brahminical qualities. And so your friends here can help support one another, not to go down, but to go up by being very careful in your habits. And the parents of all of you, you know, being good examples of those qualities will help the children develop those good qualities. I remember hearing, each time I heard about how careful Srila Prabhupada was about cleanliness, it's just mind-boggling. I remember Hari Kesh describing, and similarly, Hari Sori, those that were around Srila Prabhupada, how careful Srila Prabhupada was about cleanliness. I can't do justice to the story, but Hari Sori was describing one time he was serving Srila Prabhupada. When he first began serving Srila Prabhupada, he did something. I forget. He touched his ear or something, put his hand where it shouldn't belong and then started reaching for the food to serve Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "What are you doing?" "Oh, Prabhupada, I was just to go wash your hands." And then, so he was supposed to learn. And then he did something else and Prabhupada raised his voice. He said, the system that Prabhupada used was if you made a mistake once, that's okay, he'll explain it. But he was expecting you wouldn't make the mistake again. And if you made the mistake again, he raised his voice. You got to learn about cleanliness. And after about the fifth time of this, just unconscious, Hari Sori said, I can't help it. I was raised in the culture that I was raised in, and I don't have a sense like you have of cleanliness. Prabhupada said, you Western people are incorrigible. You can't be trained. I remember I was invited to attend a meeting, a discussion in Hari Kesha's room, and he greeted us at the door and he said, "I can't help it, I've just been trained by Srila Prabhupada, but you have to leave all your stuff outside here because just everything has to be immaculately clean." And that's because that's how Prabhupada was and that's how I was trained. And I'm sorry, no offense, but that's just the training that I received. Because Prabhupada was so strict about cleanliness. So if your mother is a little strict about cleanliness, don't mind. It's good. It will help you come to a quality of goodness and maintain it. Because that's the right standard. It's a platform of happiness. The mode of goodness is the platform of happiness. Okay. Something else? Yes?
So, Maharaj, like you were describing about the religion, the various sorts of religion coming, and is it also like the way we see in the present times, the free will of the living entity comes in touch with like the modes, and then he starts with the religion of his own?
Sure. The disposition of demoniac nature helps a lot too. Described in the Mind and Maniac chapter, they make up religions. And the divine nature doesn't do that. Okay. Please explain about Upasana Kanda, how it is different from Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. Well, the distinction is a distinction of emphasis. It's not that in Jnana Kanda there's no indication of worship, or in worship there's no indication of knowledge. It's a focus of emphasis. That's a short answer. In Karma Kanda, there's certainly knowledge. Karma Kanda rituals and the teaching behind them certainly have knowledge of the soul and knowledge of the modes of nature and knowledge of karma, and the same subject matters. It's just a point of emphasis, of difference. Like, here's a nice example. Ekadasi. Ekadasi is something that Karma Kanda followers observe, and it's something that Vaishnavas observe. Same thing. But the perspective on how to observe Ekadasi for Karma Kanda, for each of the Ekadasis, there's this ritual, there's that ritual, and there's this fruit that will come. Then the next Ekadasi, this ritual, that ritual, and another fruit that will come, and 24 of them. And you've got a big full basket of goodies by the end of 1 year of observing Karma Kanda Ekadasi. Nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, becoming more attached to Krishna. Nothing. Just lots of goodies in your goodie basket. And for the devotees, that's not of interest. It's observing Ekadasi in a different way, for a very different reason. It's an auspicious day for enriching devotion to Krishna. So we do more devotion to Krishna. And we diminish the other activities. And there may be different degrees of severity of austerities that a Vaishnava will do. But it's not just, I like pain or something like that. It's purification and allowing me to be more focused on Krishna. There's an example of a distinction between Karma Kanda and devotion to Krishna. Difference of emphasis. And therefore there's some details that are different as well. Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, in our routine life, our energy is getting wasted in adjustment of situations.
What's getting?
Energy.
Energy.
Is getting wasted in adjustment of situations or circumstances.
Why?
And
if you're Krishna conscious, that's not what happens.
And Maharaj, it's very difficult to remember personal form of Krishna in such time.
What form of Krishna do you like better?
Personal form, Maharaj.
So you Maharaj, practice. You practice. The best way to always remember the form of Krishna is to be attached to Krishna. And a way to become attached to Krishna is you try to serve Him. How do you become attached to someone? You serve them. You associate with them. You do things together. Isn't it? Practical. So the things that you do, do them for Krishna. And that way you think of Krishna. It's not abstract, it's very practical. Is that all right? And so, if I'm starting down here and I'm not up there yet, I work with where I am. But I know where I'm going. And I'm striving towards that by working for Krishna. What I'm saying is chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. This is mind fixed on Krishna, intelligence always absorbed in Him, that's topmost. If you can't do that, follow the regulations of Bhakti Yoga. If you have a problem following the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, try to work for Krishna. Okay? Read that section of chapter 12. It will help.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, it is said that when people are in distress condition, they are ready to listen to transcendental knowledge. So,
who's ready to listen to transcendental knowledge?
When they are in suffering condition, means when they
people.
People.
So,
in the suffering condition. Oh, okay. I'm ready to listen. Who's not suffering? My knee hurts. My back hurts. I'm ready to listen. Go ahead.
Especially, Maharaj, like those who are close to us, like our friends or relatives. So we feel that we should say them about that. It is basically because we have lost our relationship with Krishna, that's why, that is the original cause. But sometimes they are not ready to listen that.
Of course not.
Just want to...
They're too comfortable.
Yes, Maharaj. So, then some thoughts comes to mind that should we say that, okay, you practice Krishna consciousness and this will be relieved and future, there is possibility then they can take up your devotional service.
Yeah. The most compelling thing for those who are in the category you described, friends and relatives, is your own example. You become a very happy person, and a very kind person, and a very gentle person, and a very... You develop the qualities of a devotee, that's more compelling than any lecture you're going to give them. Millions of times. Then they'll start asking you, hey, what's going on? But as long as they're... Anyway. I'm not saying you don't do that. I'm just giving an answer to... The likelihood of relatives and family members, close people close, they see, like Prabhupada said, a sadhu is never appreciated at home. Because they see him in a material way. He's like one of us. So they don't take your words with the same gravity. So don't go there so much. Be more be an example of what the teachings are. They may not practice, but they'll appreciate more than at present, just by seeing, wow, look what this is doing for our family member. That's the best, especially in those circumstances. And when you do present, gently, don't be over-enthusiastic to present. Then you have a pushback effect. Yes? Okay. So we'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.